rebel force has penetrated the shield and landed on Endor.
This is where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
People still talking about the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 5. If you look at social media, you see all kinds of opinions and hot takes. Now, we did most of our hot taken last night on the Book of Boba Fett After Show, which you can find on the website, rebelforceradio.com, in the podcast feed, as well as on YouTube if you would like to watch the video of it. But I can't stop thinking about it. I really can't. It was so good, and it made me... I probably have spent more time questioning the strategy in the storytelling than I did the episode, because the episode is on its on the surface just great. There was a lot of really... really great moments, you know, having bookending the episode between that raid that he makes on the meat factory all the way to the end where he's flying the Naboo starfighter. I mean, just brilliant stuff. And then you got a lot of exposition in the middle. I mean, that might not have been everyone's cup of tea because, you know, there was a lot of building the ship. There was a lot of talk of the armorer or talk with the armorer. But all it seemed to do is just draw this incredible contrast between the Mandalorian and Boba Fett as characters. And, of course, we know that this was all done well in advance. So this is, was pointed out on the show, this is not a response to anything, but people are treating it like it is. So it's really, really fascinating. We'll be talking more about that and about the Book of Boba Fett in general on this week's show. Thanks so much for being here this week. We really appreciate it. Your source for the Force. Introductions in order. If you're new to the program, my name is Jason, and with me, someone who never gets tired of talking about Book of Boba Fett or Star Wars, period, my good friend and yours from Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Somehow, Rebel Force Radio has returned.
Somehow. It doesn't matter how.
Well, right? It didn't matter to the makers of The Rise of Skywalker how Palpatine came back. So it really doesn't matter how we come back each and every week. But somehow, Rebel Force Radio has returned.
And you know there are people out there wondering, how does this happen every week? Why does this happen every week? These two guys. Again?
Well, they keep throwing Star Wars at us, so we're going to keep throwing our show at you. And, wow, the Book of Boba Fett, amazing, amazing. Boba Fett versus the Mandalorian is kind of how fans are breaking down this episode, because it was essentially an episode of the Mandalorian, but it all ties into the big picture. And the big picture is unfolding and emerging, so... I don't know, maybe at the end of it all, we're going to consider this all to be just one giant story and not separate series or anything like that. It's all part of the Star Wars.
I said to a friend at work, I said, you know, you could look at this a bit like the way the Bible was written, right? I mean, you have separate books in the Bible that all make one large story, one large narrative. And this happens to be the Book of Boba Fett. But those books often, you know, look at the Gospels. They're all telling a different point of view of the story of Christ. So if we're to accept, and you could make a credible case, that Mando is the new central character in Star Wars, for future Star Wars, for the foreseeable future, he is the central figure. Yeah. Then you could see why you could have the Book of Boba Fett popping up. You could see how you could have an Ahsoka series popping up. But as you say, Jim, it's all going to tie in together and reveal that clearly Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, is the central figure in modern Star Wars.
It's a saga. It's a saga. There's no doubt about it. It's a saga. Got lots of feedback about the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 5, The Return of the Mandalorian, via RFR Patreon members, RFR on Patreon, patreon.com/RebelForceRadio. Join us. Join us. There's a whole nother world of this podcast over there. And it's really where I find the most intelligent and thoughtful feedback our podcast receives anywhere on social media is on our Patreon page.
Oh, and they're not afraid to point us, you know, point out when they think we got it wrong. You know, it's not always just a big love fest, but it's always done. It's always talking about Star Wars, and even amongst themselves, you know, you'll hear disagreements and things, but it's not about isms and ists. It's just about storytelling in the wars.
I have one of those messages here. Jason, 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 not filler.
Uh-oh.
Packed full, even the last half. Now, Jason, you did make the claim that if we received this episode as part of a Mandalorian season, it would be considered filler. I disagree with that, and so does Brian on Patreon. Jason, Jason, Jason.
Okay.
That's almost like a Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
It is. Well, can I let me explain what I mean by that. Okay. I'm not saying that I necessarily would have called this that episode filler. I think that if we were to judge the episode this week as an episode of The Mandalorian, and you look at it across the span of the two seasons that we've seen, where you really only, where you, I shouldn't say only, but where you really had two major action sequences, the first being the meatpacking plant, and the second being the that incredible ride that he had in the Naboo Starfighter, and a lot of exposition in the middle. But as you pointed out, lore, a lot of great lore, which I love. But I could see, because we've done a lot of these after shows, we've taken, you know, hundreds of calls, I think, at this point. I could see there being some people that would have considered that filler. If that would have shown up as like the second or third episode, I could see it. Again, it's not that I was calling it that. It was just an observation that in the context of Mandalorian as a show, a lot of people might have called that filler, but in the Book of Boba Fett, it was action-packed. And I think it speaks to the ups and downs of the Boba Fett series. Not that there hasn't been great stuff in it, but it really has been up and down. And there's been a lot. When it's down, it's just kind of bland. It's still Star Wars, but it's just kind of blah and bland.
I just think that as fans, we're the victims of seeing repetitious stuff happen on a TV show. And that will wear down anything. I even noted season two of Stranger Things. I felt like they're returning to the underworld or underground or
the upside down,
whatever the hell they call it. Yeah. I was like, wow, they're going back there again? I didn't need to see them return to the upside down and all that. And so I get it when judging a TV show where having repetition can really wear you down. And as much as I love the Book of Boba Fett, I understand it's been very repetitious. And I felt like it was a great relief to get off of Tatooine and also and have other characters of substance in the show, because there ain't no characters of substance in the Book of Boba Fett outside of Boba and Fennec Shand. Every other character is really one-dimensional and flimsy, and they serve a purpose.
So right about that.
You know, they're like tools. They serve a purpose to move the story in any number of directions, but there's just the characters are not intriguing. The Mandalorian features intriguing characters. The armor, very intriguing. Din Djarin, extremely. I mean, you get committed. Even Wacky Pelimoto, she has a level of intrigue, especially considering she once dated a Jawa.
Well, that's it. Like, she keeps dropping these little bits about her past and her history. And it just makes her more like, oh, we've only scratched the surface of what this woman has seen.
Oh, you know, something we didn't bring up in the after show was Pelly revealed she had never been off planet before. She had never left Tatooine. Despite the fact that she works in a spaceport and she works on spaceships, she did reveal she'd never been off world before.
That's being like an airplane mechanic and never being in an airplane.
Right, right. So I think that's a little bit of foreshadowing, too. I think we'll see Pelly getting pulled off world somewhere with the Mandalorian. But she's a compelling character. We need that. We need characters with substance. And maybe the Book of Boba Fett has failed us in that regard so far, but it's been such a story about an individual more than anything else.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I think you bring up a really great point about the lack of substantive characters around Boba, because so much of what happens around the character informs you more about the character. Yes. The way Greef Karga treated Mando from the beginning, you realize that there were multi-facets to the character of Mandalorian. It rounded him out, his relationship with the different characters. Boba hasn't even really found a suitable villain when you think about it. What, the mayor? The weird mayor? Yeah. The two huts that left? Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't have a foil. And we're 5 episodes deep.
Good point. Really good point. Really, really good point. Let's take a look at some of this Patreon feedback, see if there's anything interesting here. Neil says, have to say, J-Mac, with his spin, nailed for me why Mando is so good and Boba needed a new backstory. All we need is Mando to honor Boba Fett and change the colors of his clan to green and we're done. Boba, the Rancor riding stick ninja, and Din, the bounty hunter. I rest my case. Well, Neil, so what I think he's talking about, my spin, is that the reason why Boba isn't resembling his old self as much as the Mandalorian is resembling old Boba is because they gave all of the character attributes of Boba Fett to the Mandalorian and gave him a 2-season head start. So Boba almost needed to be reinvented somehow.
Well, you had to have a pretty pretty strict contrast. And I would say even down to the fact, because Jim, before we even saw Book of Boba Fett, we were talking about how are they going to pull this off? You're going to have two, you know, big series on Disney Plus about Mandalorians. And they look kind of similar. They have the same helmet, different paint job, of course. And perhaps the answer to that is one of the reasons why we see Boba with his helmet off so much, is to create that contrast. So you don't confuse the two. Because, you know, I was texting a buddy of mine and earlier today, and we were talking about, you know, the classic action figures back in the day and the wacky names like our parents and our grandparents used to give them. They couldn't tell the characters apart, and they always got the names mixed up, you know. And then that's still, I think, a phenomenon now that you're going to have people in the periphery of fandom and they would just see two guys that look the same. They wouldn't. I don't think they would be able to really tell the difference in passing between the two TV series, to tell you the truth.
Between the two characters specifically.
And the two characters,
I thought that was going to be kind of a tricky way to negotiate when The Mandalorian was originally announced. It's like, well, why don't they just make a show about Boba Fett? But, you know, they wanted to keep it fresh, and it's paid off in spades, but...
Oh, absolutely.
It's... they then find themselves in a compromising situation when then Boba Fett gets reintroduced. And it's the storytellers making these decisions, so obviously they know what direction they're going in. Please, Lord. Please, Lord, I hope they know what direction they're going in. But I really think it's everything's been considered about Boba Fett going back to season one of The Mandalorian. So I think care has been taken with this story, and it is going somewhere. It is. I think all the dots will be connected.
I agree. I think that the one thing we can take heart in is the fact that I don't think anything was really left up for chance with this Filoni Favreau verse. You might disagree with, like I've said before, you know, the execution, but I don't think anyone can say that any of this is some accident or it's paint by numbers or anything like that. I think it's very, 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 very deliberate and finely crafted.
Something that Filoni told us he learned from Lucas, well, didn't learn from Lucas, but he told us about this interchange he had with George, where during the Clone Wars, Boba Fett used Jango's helmet to lure Mace Windu, and the helmet was loaded with explosives as Boba was trying to kill Mace Windu to exact revenge for the death of his father. And when they blew the helmet up, Filoni said, you know, George, it's got the dent in the helmet. And if you blow up that helmet, that means it's not the same helmet that Boba is wearing in Empire Strikes Back. And Lucas was like, oh, God. Really? He said, why are you being so precious about everything? And yeah. That's when Dave sort of started to tell us as fans, you know, unlearn what you've learned and that kind of tap dance that he was doing. But just
that was one of those expressions that Dave gave a lot, yeah. Is the unlearn what you have learned. I remember that. That was a favorite.
Yeah. From very early on, because they were working on season two by the time we started talking to them. And so I think Filoni was realizing how in deep it all was getting. And he was anticipating a lot of the fan questions because he proposed the same questions to George Lucas. And that's why I think Dave Filoni's the best guy to be in there. Because, and he's a goalie. He's not going to let the puck get by him. So I like that about Dave.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about, I brought it up, how I was a little surprised to hear that the New Republic was incorporating the use of a death penalty, right? Right. They said that Moff Gideon could be executed for his crimes against humanity. And I recalled that the death penalty was brought up before in Star Wars, when Dr. Avazan said, I have the death penalty on 12 systems. But I couldn't recall any other references to executing prisoners in Star Wars, but we got a couple here on Patreon. John Edmondson says, as far as the death sentence goes, Tarkin was saying they wanted the death penalty for Ahsoka when they put her on trial. So that's Clone Wars era Republic. And so it was definitely something that was there in the Republic prior to the Empire. And then in the Imperial reign, Brian Robinson says, Tarkin signed Leia's death sentence. And that we knew. I mean, she was scheduled to be executed.
Yeah, 3PO says that, yep. When R2 is reading the, you know, all the information in the Death Star and the databanks about her.
So that's a hockey puck that got by me. The goalie, because the Tarkin thing with Ahsoka, okay, you know, I can see I how I wouldn't remember that. But any references coming from A New Hope, that stuff I should be retrieving instantly in my head.
Yeah.
Because there is no other movie in the world that I am more intimately aware of than A New Hope. And I could probably quote the whole movie to you.
What is the line, though, that 3PO actually says about Leia?
She's scheduled to be executed, terminated. That's it. She's scheduled to be terminated.
Terminated. But so that, I think it implies what we're saying here is that, you know, it's a death sentence, it's a death penalty. But I'm going to give you some forgiveness there because of the way that the line is written. It's you know, she's scheduled to be terminated. Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't necessarily imply that there was some sort of a crime against the government, and this there was any kind of trial. It's just like, yeah, well, they're gonna bump her off.
That's it, you know? Because they do what they want to do because they're an oppressive imperial government who oppresses. That's interesting stuff, and people are responding. People are definitely responding to conversations we had in the after show. And that was such a great after show. I mean, really, The callers were so great. Tyler Page did an amazing job screening the calls, and the level of quality of the conversations were all so good. So thank you guys so much. It was a lot of fun to watch that show.
Yeah.
Going into Wednesday, it just suddenly occurred to me, we're going to have new Star Wars tomorrow. And I kind of basked in the glow of that. And then I was like, oh, that's such a good feeling. I'm going to text that to Swank and Billy Mack. And then I was like, oh, that's too good. I got to share that everywhere. So I'm putting it up on Twitter and everywhere. I'm like, it's just, it's like nothing beats the feeling of knowing there is new Star Wars coming tomorrow. And that was just something that made me feel good. So,
well, we need those.
Yeah, we need that.
We know there's so much bad news. If you really, you know, it doesn't, you don't have to look hard these days for bad news. You know, the media is just full of it. They love to serve it up to you. But you need those things to look forward to.
Yes.
And I love that. I love the optimism. Yes. I mean, we're living in a new golden age of Star Wars. You're not, and you're not going to like everything that comes out. But if you're a Star Wars fan, you have to just revel in it. You have to revel in it.
We're living in the future, and I'll tell you how I know. I read it in a newspaper 15 years ago. Okay. think about that, folks.
It's got to be a song.
It is.
Is that a song?
It's
there?
A John Prine. John
okay.
Prine.
Oh, all right.
Can't
all
help
right.
myself.
I love John Prine.
The late, great John
like
Prine.
John Prine.
Jeff Ulickney, who is now, I guess, the official RFR composer. He's the man who is the wizard, actually, behind the hit from Puppet Lando, I Want My Felt to Be Felt, words and production by Jeff Ulickney, orchestration.
He's the next Cole Porter, that guy.
I mean, really. Yeah, this is,
I mean.
These are additions to the American Songbook that will live on forever via Puppet
Lando. I can hear
Lando.
Frank, you know, if Frank would have heard, I Want My Felt to Be Felt, I think he might have been a little jelly.
Yeah.
That went to Puppet Lando. He would have liked to have seen that come his way.
Yeah.
If you know what
He's
I mean.
He's sitting there like having a cocktail with Tom Dreesen. He's like, what do you know about this puppet? I'm hearing talk. I'm hearing things. But
he'd be threatened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
I heard he swings. But so Jeff gave us the unofficial Book of Boba Fett ringtone, which I will be posting up for our Patreon pals. And I think, Jason, do you have a copy of the file?
I think I've got it right here. Let's see if this is it.
That's pretty good.
All right.
That's pretty good.
That is good.
So that's the Book of Boba Fett ringtone via Jeff Ulickney. And we'll be posting.
That's
that.
Good. So you're sitting in a meeting, and the wife texts you, and this is what you hear.
Oh, you got to go. I mean,
wow. Yeah, right. I got
to
take this.
That's
call.
A call to action.
I got to answer this text.
That is a call to action. I love it.
I love
That's
it.
Great. That's great.
That's great.
So, yeah, that'll be available to every member of Rebel Force Radio on Patreon. One final leftover bit from the after show. I had taken note of how many times the word creed appeared in the script for Book of Boba Fett Chapter 4. And I did notice on the subtitles for the show, the closed captioning, creed was always spelled with a capital C.
Right.
So I'm like, well, yeah, you know, they're referring to the creed. But sure. Wouldn't it be funnier if they were referring to Creed Bratton from The Office? Creed Bratton, who was like a cult favorite character on The Office. I mean,
no, he'd only show up for, you know, one brief line or two at the most. That was what was so great about it, because it was always unforgettable, the Creed moment of each episode of The
right.
Office.
And wouldn't the Book of Boba Fett or The Mandalorian benefit from a Creed moment in an episode every week? I think it would. I think it would. So
the Creed.
I brought this up on the show, and Jason, you said someone's got to make a mashup of that. So
challenge accepted.
You gave me my marching orders. I went down to the RFR sound lab and decided I'm going to create what it would sound like if Creed Bratton showed up on an episode of The Book of Boba Fett or The Mandalorian.
I am told it is the Dark Saber.
Indeed.
Whoever wields it can lead all of Mandalore.
If it is won by Creed in battle.
You know, a human can go on living for several hours after being decapitated.
Have you ever heard of Bo-Katan Kryze?
The sword you now possess. It was gifted to her and not won by Creed.
I'm a pretty normal guy. I do one weird thing. I like to go in the women's room for number two. I've been caught several times and I have paid dearly.
Have you ever removed your helmet?
What is wrong with this woman? She's asking about stuff that's nobody's business.
By creed, you must vow.
I've been involved in a number of cults, both as a leader and a follower. You have more fun as a follower, but you make more money as a leader.
According to creed...
First rightly care, fuck there must our femurs, geese or vodka.
This is the way.
Oh, come on. Oh my God! Where are the podcast Emmys? Wait, come on, that is
hey, listen,
absolutely solid gold. That's incredible.
Save all the Emmys for the Book of Boba Fett or the Mandalorian, if they actually do find a way to incorporate Creed Bratton into each episode. As you can hear there, that's solid gold. That's solid gold.
Oh, we got to get that on Office Ladies. If anybody knows the Office Ladies, could you send them that? It's very topical. All right. Hey, we got a little bit of listener mail here. Let's see what is on the minds of RFR listeners.
You must contact me.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message after the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him. It's a trick. Send no reply.
Hey, chat guys. My name is Chris. I'm from O'Fallon, Illinois. Love the show. I listen to you guys all the time. Hey, about these black melons on Tatooine, I did some looking. I remembered a documentary I saw a long time ago about the Sand People of South Africa or Southern African region. There's a few countries that play there. Anyway, these guys use ostrich eggs. They drill a hole in them, and they get all the stuff out of there and eat it. And then they repurpose those ostrich eggs by filling them with water, resealing them, and burying them in the ground for when water is in low, short supply, they can recoup those and the tribe can drink. I believe that's what they're doing with these black melons. That's why the Tuscan child knew exactly where to find them. They had buried them previously with water for later use. And that's why you don't see the black smoke coming out of them either, because they've been repurposed. However, later on in the shows, when you see the black smoke come out, I believe that's the real melon off of the tree or bush or wherever they come from with its actual natural stuff inside. Anyway, just thought I'd share that with you guys. Love it. Keep it up. And I'll be listening a lot more. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, man. Thank you. That's so cool. I'm actually playing here. If you're a Patreon All Access member, you can see the video. And we've got this GIF that repeats of a close-up of the Tuscan, you know, breaking through the black melon with his thumbs, and the black smoke comes out. So that's the initial use of the black melon. But what our caller is saying is that maybe they're repurposing the melon to hold water that they can then bury and use down the road.
Yeah, real world implications here. And, that's cool. And note that in the Book of Boba Fett, there's references made to water being in the melon and milk. So there's your variable there. When you first harvest the melon and you open it up, the puff of black vapor pops up. You drink the milk and that gives you nourishment. Then you fill it up with water and bury it for future usage.
And then you begin to crave it.
And then you begin to crave it. Yeah, you can't get enough of that stuff. So that's really interesting. I would have never guessed there were real-world implications on these melons in
That's incredibly cool.
But, I mean, this is some really killer research, and that is a great find. What was his name?
Yeah, no,
that's O'Fallon?
What was it?
Hey, chat guys. My name is Chris. I'm from O'Fallon, Illinois.
Thank you for that information. Yeah. That is some So it's just like a really unique factoid that may or may not have influenced the Book of Boba Fett. I'm saying it did.
I agree. Yeah. I think that it's very likely that it did. And we know, what was, my gosh, I'm so bad with names, but what was the name of that incredible lady that we talked to that worked on creating a lot of the characters for the prequel trilogy?
Terrell Whitlatch.
Terrell Whitlatch. And she was, I believe, Jim, a zoologist. Yeah. She had a zoology background, and George looked to real life biologists and zoologists to create this depth of reality, as if these various societies and races and creatures and aliens could actually exist.
Yeah,
and make them more realistic.
He went to the real experts and the ones who were steeped in knowledge about real world stuff, but also had a great imagination. So Terrell could take her knowledge about real earth biology and then transform it into a lot of the creatures we see in the prequel trilogy. It's very similar to the method in which Ralph McQuarrie was hired. Now, Ralph was working for Boeing, and he was drawing very technical stuff, but he had a great imagination, and he could tap his technical knowledge then to create fantastical starships and environments and even creatures and characters, and
an imagination that was grounded in a sense of reality, which is very cool.
He could be way out there, Ralph, but he knew how things mechanically were constructed and would take all of that into account when he was making all that great concept art. So
that was such a fun interview. I don't know if it's on our YouTube channel. I know if you search her name on our website, you'll definitely see the episode.
2013. But,
that was a lot of fun. Amazing. This guy's brain, the way it works, what it chooses to remember is astonishing. 2013.
Yes.
Oh, my God. He's Rain Man. it's a really fun interview. So check that out. All right. Let's check out some headlines.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer. I have good news.
You know, before we started recording this week's show, Jim was like, I just can't let a week go by without hearing from Tim Morris. Yeah. And I just love hearing from Tim in these interviews and stuff. And so I think you got something new for us this week. Something from Entertainment Tonight, maybe?
Entertainment Tonight posted clips from a new interview to their YouTube channel, and featuring Tim Morrison. And at this point in the season, we're all very aware of the changes that the character of Boba Fett has gone through, the evolution of the character. And Tim discusses this a little bit. And so, yeah, you're right, Jason. We have to hear from Tim. He wasn't even on his own show this week. So we got to give him some love on RFR. Tim Morrison.
All right.
He's stripping away the layers. We're finding a little bit more about the what makes him ticks. Again, they've both had near-death experiences, almost been buried in the sand alive. Again, getting to know a new tribe and being accepted into a kind of family environment with the Tusken Raiders. And he's changing his ways, and he's a little bit more open. Obviously, he needs some backup in terms of Ming-Na's character. So so I think the series allows us to explore though that void that we knew little of, because he wasn't seen that much in those earlier sagas. So so now, yes, it's all about just revealing the real Boba, and he wants to lead this organization and this arena with respect.
I can't say enough about the moment in our after show when I believe the caller's name was Jeff, called in and said, you know, I think that this is leading up to, in so many words, he said, I think this is all leading up to Boba Fett being the new ruler of Mandalore, mm-hmm. and the fulfillment of the prophecy of the one who would come riding on the Mythosaur and all of that. And it really just turned the after show around, because it was something I hadn't even considered. Mm-hmm. And then, Jim, when you start to factor in the way that the Boba Fett character has, I would say, matured into one who wants to use diplomacy, wants to use fairness, and wants to use all this, it's like, wow, he is sort of becoming a real leader. Now, is he cut out to lead a crime family? Maybe not. But is he equipped to lead a people, mm-hmm. you know, as in the Mandalorians? Quite possibly. And to hear Tem actually talk about those qualities, how he has changed and he is now discovering things about himself. Mm. And, you know, it's all starting to fit.
We don't really have a solid motivation for why Boba Fett wants to be a crime lord. Right. That still is yet to be established through 5 episodes. We know that Bib double-crossed him. It seems like, but we don't even know how we did that. It just seems like Boba's only motivation for wanting to take over Jabba's territory as the local crime lord, the daimyo, is because he's seeking revenge on people. He wants revenge on Bib, so he shoots him and takes his throne. Mm-hmm. He wants revenge on the Pikes because he tried to do a deal with them, and I'm almost certain this has still not been revealed yet.
Yeah.
But I'm almost certain that the Tusken massacre was not done by the Kintin Striders, the Nikto speeder bike gang, but it was done by the Pikes as a way of getting back at Boba for busting up their train and taking their water and
right.
charging a toll. So I think that they're the ones who have a problem. And it's even in chapter 4 when Boba is sitting by the fireside with Fennec. She is very skeptical that the speeder bike gang could have taken on the Tuskens in that way.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, the Tuskens are badass warriors, mm-hmm. and they're not taken down lightly. I mean, you can see that in, well, so many instances of the Tusken Raiders, but I mean, particularly, with the stuff that we see in the earlier chapters of Book of Boba Fett. I mean, they're ruthless, but one thing that the Book of Boba Fett did was show that there is real substance underneath that ruthlessness. And it's, you know, hey, let's face it, they're ruthless because they live in a ruthless environment. You know, it's survival of the fittest there. They once inhabited a land that was, you know, a plenty full of water and seas, and now it's nothing but desert. And they have beaten back the elements and survived. And they had to be tough.
Yeah, through evolution, of course.
Right.
And then it just became really intrinsic to their culture, to the point where it's almost religious to the Tuskens and spiritual and things like that. Their brutality in response to their environment, which provides more brutality, has been something that has forged them as a people. And I think that's very misunderstood. And a lot of people look at them as savages and everything. Well, maybe they are, but there's more substance to the savagery.
That's right. That's right. And you know, we see that. I mean, we were so blown away by Boba Fett's introduction in The Mandalorian season 2 when he opened that can of Boba Fett whoop-ass on those stormtroopers and the cracking of the helmets. And you use that word brutality. That's what it was. It was so brutal. And now we know where he learned it. You know, now we know where he got those fighting skills, because we have nothing in the prequel trilogy or Clone Wars or sequel trilogy to indicate that that's the fighting style or the style period of Boba Fett of that time. Certainly mm-hmm. not. Mm-hmm. So that's where all of that came from. So,
yeah. And you want to see it all pay off. Boba's training with the Tuskens, we've only really seen it pay off once, when he walked into Anchorhead and smacked everyone around with the gaffy stick.
Yeah, right.
And walked out of there. That's really the only time we saw Boba display those Tusken Raider skills outside of living off the land, which we've seen him do a few times. So I really want to see a big payoff for Boba being this fusion of Mandalorian and Tusken Raider.
Yes.
And Bounty Hunter.
Yes.
It has to reach a point. And I think Boba is primarily inspired by seeking revenge, and that's why he's a crime lord. But I think he's going to realize that ruling over all of these degenerate criminals is beneath him. And he might seek that higher source, like claiming the Darksaber and becoming the ruler of Mandalore. Blake Weaver on Patreon says, making the argument for Boba possibly being the new Mandalore blew my mind. I wonder if his training with the Tuskens could have been enough training for him to wield that Darksaber like a pro.
Ooh. Wow. That's cool. Yeah. That is cool. Now, we do know that he would have to take it by force from Din Djarin.
Yes. Yeah.
But
That was all set up in this last episode, too.
Yeah, right.
Where we see Paz Vizsla try to make a claim and fail.
Paz, speaking of Paz Vizsla, we heard from an esteemed member of our Jedi Council that character was played by Dave Bautista.
Is that true? No evidence. I looked into that and I found no evidence.
And this esteemed member of our Jedi Council is not one to throw those things out without some certainty behind it. But you're right, Jim. It's not credited anywhere.
No. And Dave is on the record for saying he's auditioned for Star Wars in the past and was turned down.
Was that before or after the Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think it was after.
Oh, really?
Or maybe it was before. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think he made the statement after Guardians of the Galaxy, but maybe his rejection happened before Guardians of the Galaxy. Either way, he's in the Marvel house, and he's a guy who is definitely attractive to these franchise tentpole films.
He was Inspector in James Bond as a henchman that went after Bond. Introduction, I guess. I mean, and a former pro wrestler as well. So
yeah, he's in Blade Runner. He's in Dune. He's been everywhere. This guy, you can't get rid of him. He's in all the franchises now. So Star Wars definitely seems like that would be the next big step for him. I mean, it's the big franchise after all. But why incorporate him in a scene that, you know, stunt guys can do? You don't see his face. You don't hear his voice. It just seems like a waste of time to even suit him up.
Unless he just really wanted to do it, you know?
Yeah, but there is a stunt double for Paz Vizsla in the credits.
Correct.
So
yeah, that's right. Maybe we can get some clarification. If you out there listening know of any of this or have heard this, please let us know. Show at rebelforceradio.com. But that's a rumor on the inside that Dave Bautista was Paz Vizsla.
Maybe he was. I don't know. Maybe he's listening to the show. Give us a call. Send us an email.
Stranger things have happened. We've gotten calls and emails from pro football players, now pro wrestlers. It happens.
We did get an email from a pro wrestler. I'm gonna jump ahead here.
Yeah, please do.
Because this was really cool, this email we got recently. And I'm sure there are guys out in the audience who's going to know Mark, who sent us this email. Smart Mark! He says, RFR, my name is Mark, and I work for All Elite Wrestling on TNT and TBS as the character Smart Mark Sterling. AEW Wrestling, Smart Mark. I also host and produce a top wrestling podcast called the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast.
Whoa. What?
You know that? You know that show?
Yeah.
Lots of people listen to it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Dude, this is happening live on air. I know this guy. I mean, I don't know this guy, but I watch this guy. I watch them on YouTube. I love that podcast. That's Mark.
That's Smart Mark.
Smart Mark. Wow. That is so cool. I love the podcast. If you're a fan of wrestling, and particularly of wrestling figures, it's a great, great podcast to listen to. They do these great episodes where they rate their favorite wrestling figures of all time or of the best of the year. They go back to the old LJN days of the 80s. And he does it with a couple of pro wrestlers.
Yeah.
Wow, that is so cool. I had no idea that he was out there listening. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, he says he's a big fan of RFR and heard this week that Jason Swank was a bit of a wrestling fan. Love to hear it.
Oh, geez.
Smart Mark says, I found your show during the pandemic, and I think you guys give a great and positive view on Star Wars and fandom as a whole. I love the weekly show, the after shows, and the YouTube archives. Great job. If you ever need tickets, if AEW comes to your area, let me know. So, yeah, let's go see some wrestling, man. Oh, I used to go see the old WWF at the Rosemont Horizon back in the 80s. And we would see guys like Cowboy Bob and Roddy Piper and, I mean, real superstars of the era. Jake the Snake Roberts. You know, that's my wrestling.
But right,
I found myself watching more and more wrestling, different leagues and stuff, and just, you know, getting a little, I love a good boost of energy, and a lot of the stuff that I consume as far as entertainment gives me that. It uplifts me, and wrestling does that for me. I get excited watching it. That's why I like sports so much.
It was such a huge part of my childhood, because I wasn't a sports fan, and so I didn't have that connection with my brother through things like football and baseball and the sports that he was in, but we did bond over wrestling. Plus, I was 4 years younger, so I was his live-action wrestling figure. So whenever he wanted to try out a new move, you know, on Grandma and Grandpa's bed, it was suplex and body slam. But we went to the Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio, every month for years to see WWF back in the 80s. And I'm so sorry to Mark and the other hosts. I was so caught off guard by realizing that Mark is a listener. Forgot to mention that his co-hosts are Matt Cardona and Brian Myers, and both great wrestlers in their own right, and have been in WWE as well as in some of the other leagues. But they're big dudes, and they're big. I hate to say it, but they're big geeks, and they love action figures, and they love not just wrestling action figures, but Star Wars figures and all that. And they have these amazing collections. So can you imagine if RFR and the major, figure wrestling pod had some sort of cage match? It would be fantastic. It'd be awesome. Yeah, that's really made my week. I love the fact that, that he listened. That's very cool.
Great. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be taking him up on those tickets to see AEW because, you know, that's the one that the fans like the most right now.
It's
like the real wrestling fans.
Yep.
I grew up being a big fan of Bret Hart, and I just love like the technical stuff that he does. It seems like AEW is more about the technical stuff as opposed to the wacky cartoon show that surrounds a lot
of soap opera.
Wrestling.
The soap opera.
It just gets overwhelming.
I agree. I mean, it feels, for me, it feels more like what I consider classic 80s, 90s, WWF, and even WCW, where it was more about the skills of the wrestlers than it was over-the-top drama. Look, there was always over-the-top drama, but at the end of the day, there was always a kick-ass match. I mean, Ricky Steamboat and Macho Man Savage at WrestleMania 3 going at it for, 35, 40 minutes in one of the greatest matches of all time. I mean, it's an art. It really, when done well, it really is an art, like dance, like any great physical performance. And I'm another guy who loves wrestling is Big Steve.
Oh,
Big
no. Steve Glosson. You're kidding. That guy's a wrestling
He's
fan?
He's a big wrestling fan.
No.
When
I found myself getting back into wrestling, I started texting Steve and asking him questions. And he's the one who told me AEW is that's the one to watch. That's what
the one
he told me.
Yeah. That's the one, boys. Wow, what a great email. Yeah, we gotta do something in 2022 with those guys. What an honor.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
maybe like a suplex or something. Driver. Pile drive Swank right into the canvas.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Back to Star Wars.
Back to Star Wars. Okay, so there's some news coming out of Star Wars sessions over in the UK. And Jim, we haven't heard much lately because of Book of Boba Fett. We haven't heard much about Andor. We haven't heard much about Kenobi, but there's some scoops that these guys are getting, and they've kind of distilled it down into some categories. First of all, now they reached out to us. Am I right?
StarWarsSessions.co.uk. Mm-hmm. They occasionally send us some of the tips that they get tipped off to, and they're out there in the UK, so they're connected to Star Wars productions going on out there, most notably Andor, which was shooting. God, they had a long shoot for Andor out in the UK. And we know that there are future Star Wars streaming series that are going to be shot out in London or in England. And so they share this stuff with us, and we're more than happy to share it with you guys because you need to know this stuff. They have intriguing information regarding both Andor and Kenobi.
So check this out. So Andor is not going to involve or is not using the volume in its production. It sounds like it's all done. It's all shot on location for the most part, or you know, various sound stages, but. They're not using at least that in terms of special effects. The other thing that they're mentioning is that this show is dark, and they use the term very dark. And, you know, to the extent that it is being shepherded by Tony Gilroy, who worked on the Jason Bourne series, that's the direction that they're taking it. This is the Jason Bourne of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I think we're looking at him right here, Cassian Andor.
I know a lot of fans that will be very happy by the notion that some Jason Bourne special sauce is being applied to the Star Wars recipe.
Yeah, no doubt. And of course, you know, who better than Tony Gilroy? And let's remember, you know, Tony Gilroy did not step into Rogue One as, you know, a bona fide Star Wars fan that couldn't wait to play in George's sandbox. Quite the opposite. He certainly didn't have an adversarial relationship with Star Wars. He just wasn't, you know, just wasn't his thing. He wasn't a big fan. Yeah. But
like George Lucas said, don't be so precious about it.
Right.
Gilroy is like that. He's not so precious.
He's not, but he certainly saved that production, at least, you know, in the sense of delivering the film that I guess Disney later realized they wanted. I think the initial film that they had asked for was something quite different, and that's you know, what was delivered to them. But nonetheless, so they're using terms like this is like Kathleen Kennedy described it. It's a spy thriller, but it's going to be very intense. It's going to be very dark, and you know, as they say, what would you expect with a nascent rebellion attempting to rise up and form itself in a galaxy caught in the vice grip of Palpatine's empire? It doesn't sound like it would be bristling with levity. Adventure, yes. The need to get dirty and do terrible things in the name of the rebellion, yes. And I think so much of what you need to know about the Cassian Andor character is revealed in that, you know, first 5 minutes of Rogue One, where he shoots in the gut shot, shoots and kills an informant that was there to help him. But the greater good, he needed to get out of there. And there was no way that guy who was wounded was going to be able to get out of there in time as the Empire was encroaching on him.
Yeah, and that's going to make the show Andor pick up on that. And it's going to be gritty, it's going to be dark, and it's going to be aimed at a more mature audience than the previous Star Wars live action shows we've seen thus far. Well, we'll find out somewhere between mid to late summer this year. I'm predicting a September release for Andor, especially if the Mandalorian season 3 will be pushed back a little bit. I don't see that dropping in the fall. I think it might even be pushed back to early 2023.
Really? I was thinking December, kind of in that Book of Boba Fett slot, like Book of Boba. December, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what they're targeting, but I don't know. I don't know if they'll be able to pull it off because there have been pandemic delays with shooting The Mandalorian and stuff like that.
Right.
But maybe not. Maybe that's just being overblown and it's just stuff I'm seeing on the internet that doesn't add up. But it looks like the way that the shows will roll out after Book of Boba Fett is Kenobi next, followed by Andor.
Right.
And then, of course, you'll have the animated Bad Batch figuring in there somewhere. But that's what's on our slate for sure in 2022. Maybe the Mandalorian Season 3 will squeeze in right under the wire there and give us a 2022 debut. I certainly hope it will. And I think, like you said, Jason, it's going to be a December thing like they did with Boba Fett. as opposed to the previous two seasons of The Mandalorian, which dropped in late fall, mid to late fall. The first season of The Mandalorian, I think, dropped at the beginning of November. I think both of them did.
Yeah.
Maybe the second one came a little earlier. But that's what's going on then for Andor. Gritty, dark, mature.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot you in the gut if you can't climb out of the that's hole.
Right.
And leave you for dead. So that's interesting to note that there is going to be no volume in play.
Yeah.
And there wasn't any volume in play for Rogue One that right. we know. And so judging from the size of the sets that we've seen, there's been leaked photos of the sets. You guys can Google them for Andor.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they built an entire town to shoot this film in, or this series in. So maybe the volume isn't really a necessary thing for Andor.
The one thing that gives me pause a little bit about this, and maybe it won't be an issue, but could we be looking at a similar situation with Andor like we have with Book of Boba Fett, where we're kind of stuck in the same place for a long period of time? I would expect with a kind of, you know, Jason Bourne type, you know, spy thriller. I guess I'm thinking more James Bond than I am Jason Bourne, although Bourne, you know, kind of hopscotched across the world as well, that you would have inherent in a spy thriller, you would have the hero jumping around and sort of, you know, going from place to place and following leads and all of that, that he wouldn't be necessarily bound to one city, one town, one system to keep it Star Wars. So I hope that the volume not being involved doesn't imply that we're going to be stuck in one place for a long period of time, like we have been with Book of Boba.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
I've never seen a Jason Bourne movie.
Okay.
I caught part of one on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably the first one. And I said to myself, dude, you're just not buying Matt Damon as an action hero. You're just not buying it. And from that point on, I just completely ignored the Bourne franchise.
I had a very similar experience because everyone told me, well, you love James Bond. Wait till you see Jason Bourne. So I rented, this is back in the day when you did this, I rented the first one and I got about halfway through and I was real sleepy and I'm kind of bored. I'm not into this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one came out and it really went crazy at the bananas at the box office. And I watched it totally hooked, then watched the next one, then went back and rewatched the first one, loved it. But it was weird. It was, I had, the second one is what really turned me onto the character. And I was really all in. And then I went back and rewatched the first one. So I had a similar reaction to you. So you might want to give it another shot because they are great. And the Daniel Craig version of Bond was very much influenced by that Jason Bourne, that first Jason Bourne movie, which preceded it.
It's just the Matt Damon factor. I have a hard time, and I like Matt Damon,
mm-hmm.
but I just have a hard time accepting him as an action hero. And I mean, every time I see him, I just think of the kid who's sweeping the hallways in Goodwill Hunting. I can't get past that.
Right.
And so I have not seen really a Bourne movie, although I've seen parts of them. I get like the tone and the feel for them and everything. Yeah. But like I said, I was watching it on an airplane, and also not the optimal situation to be watching any movies is on an airplane. And I'm not talking about watching it on my iPad with headphones on. I'm talking about watching it on that little TV monitor that's up on the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Analog TV right. monitor up on the ceiling as I'm on the Frontier flight and the whole thing's shaking and the you can hear the nuts and bolts of the plane kind of coming loose as you're flying over
it's
a large
a relaxing,
body of water.
It's not a, you know, laid back movie watching experience. I'm with you.
Oh
there.
No,
I'm
not at all. Oh, there's another movie that just really irritated me. I was watching on a plane. It was called I, Robot with Will Smith. And I was like, this is terrible.
I hated that movie.
Okay, all right. Well, I didn't know if it was the airplane or the movie itself.
No, I hated that movie.
I was just like, oh, this is junk. When you'd rather sleep on the plane than watch your crappy movies.
Oh, thank God for iPads. Because I know you were a little late in getting an iPad. Mm-hmm. Have you flown since you got your iPad?
Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of Harry Potter movies on the iPad. I remember because we were doing a show called The Franchise.
Right. Yeah.
And we were reviewing all the Harry Potter films right before the Fantastic Beasts film dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I have to watch these Harry Potter films. So I watched on the
iPad. So that's how you did it.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun.
It's a totally different experience.
Sitting there.
Yeah.
I felt a little silly sitting there watching a Harry Potter movie on a plane. I don't know. I've always felt that way on airplanes. Reading a comic book on the airplane.
Oh, you feel like everyone's judging you?
I'll do it, but what?
You feel like everyone's judging you? Like they're like, look at this silly bastard with the comic book.
Look at this a-hole with the mad fold-in in the back of the magazine.
All right, so continuing along with some of this information we got from StarWarsSessions.co.uk, this one, I read this a few times, Jim, and each time I started getting a little bit more concerned. I mean, I'm as excited for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series as the next Star Wars, maybe even more so. I mean, Obi-Wan is in my top five of all-time favorite Star Wars characters. And this bugged me just a little bit. So I'm going to read from what they said. It could go either way. Don't get me wrong. This show will shock. It isn't just fans who are hyped for the show. Our source has told us that the studio is, quote, raving about Kenobi, the folks at Lucasfilm, whereas the chatter around the Book of Boba Fett has been muted in comparison, okay? Not gung-ho about Book of Boba. Okay, so the first thing that comes to my mind is I'm not sure that the folks at Lucasfilm not being over the moon about a show is necessarily a bad thing. Because I find sometimes I'm a little out of step with what the brass at Lucasfilm likes, I feel, perhaps.
Yeah.
But they're raving about Kenobi. So that the cynic in me says, uh-oh, if they're happy, I don't know how I'm going to feel. it says that they're going as far to say that Kenobi is, quote, being billed as the biggest Star Wars event of the past few years and the next few years also. Well, as we found out this week with the Book of Boba Fett, the Mandalorian's shoes are quite big to fill in this world of Star Wars on television. And yeah, you could say, yeah, but they got Obi-Wan Kenobi. Okay, fair enough. But they also had Boba frickin' Fett. And he's still being a tad upstaged by the Mandalorian. It says, as if that wasn't reason enough to start getting carried away, as Star Wars fans do so well, our source went on to tell us that Kenobi is going to shock everyone. This is a very new world, new story for Obi-Wan, and people aren't prepared for how different this show is going to be. All generations of fans will be catered for. This is truly transitional Star Wars. So let's break it down a little bit here,
Jim. A lot
of
the terminology is downright frightening in this piece.
It's going to shock.
That doesn't sound good right there. When I see the word shock, it means they're going to be taking liberties with this character that are going to be completely outside the box and hard for us to fathom. I hope when they say the show will shock, they're talking more in about the situations and the story and things and not be taking such liberties with the character. Like, you know, Obi-Wan has another family somewhere or he becomes this cold-hearted killer bounty hunter or something like that.
Right, this is stuff.
These will be taking liberties with the character that has been very, very important to Star Wars throughout the first two trilogies. I mean, extremely, he was the spiritual edge of the original Star Wars film, which is the most important of all Star Wars films. It set the foundation. It broke the ground. It established the where the franchise could go from that moment. And then they brought him back in the prequels, making the character even more important to Star Wars without necessarily shocking us. It seemed very, the character was consistent with the old
Ben
that we knew.
That's the word.
And
right there.
So to take liberties with a character who's already been presented to us in a younger version is being consistent with the older version. How are you going to fill in the middle with something completely outside the box?
He's the moral center in so many ways of this story, of the saga. And then, you know, like you mentioned, prequels, original trilogy, and also the Clone Wars. He was always the voice of reason in Anakin's ear. And he's got to continue to be that. You said consistent. What was the consistency of? The consistency between, the consistency of creating this character that would lead us to Alec Guinness. So it's hard to imagine that at this point in his life, he's going to take some big U-turn.
Yeah.
You know, and then still end up as Alec Guinness.
He's like this alcoholic gambler and stuff. I just don't see that happening.
I hope not. Now, okay, so it's going to shock. People aren't prepared for how different this show is going to be.
That doesn't sound
different. This show is going to be. I don't know that I want different. I don't want it to be the same as Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett, but I still want it to be not. Star Wars.
Right. We don't want it to be something incredibly different. And the reason is because, as I've said, the key word here is consistency.
Yeah.
And there is a consistent line between young Ewan and old Alec Guinness. There's a consistent line. So they have to maintain that. But we still need fresh elements of the character to emerge. Mm-hmm. We need fresh challenges for him to deal with. We need him to really look deep inside and maybe beat himself up a little bit for what happened to the Republic and Anakin Skywalker and Yoda. I mean, he needs to take a little bit of responsibility for that because he should have never offered to train Anakin in the first place. He was only honoring the dying words of his master. But
right.
He wasn't substantially invested in that kind of cause. He was just doing what Qui-Gon requested of him. And Qui-Gon said, you're going to be a great Jedi. So Obi-Wan felt like he needed to follow every word that Qui-Gon said.
There
is loyal.
There is not, as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, what do we still need to see? What connective tissue needs to be created here between the Obi-Wan of episode 3 and I want to include the Obi-Wan of the Clone Wars as well, because I think it's very, very important. It's the most Obi-Wan track there is, you know, as far as volume, hours of content is the Clone Wars. So the Obi-Wan of the Clone Wars / episode 3 to the Alec Guinness version, he's pretty well baked. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of evolution that needs to happen to get him from Ep 3 to Ep 4, really. I mean, yes, some gray hair, some maturity. The one thing that sticks out that Alec Guinness had that McGregor and even Jat's version in the Clone Wars had a little bit of was that glint in his eye. There was something sort of whimsical, mischievous, ornery about Alec Guinness's Obi-Wan. He could be dead serious in some moments, but also playful in other moments. And everything was taken in stride. You never saw him break a sweat. Literally, even in his duel with Darth Vader, he didn't really break a sweat. It was very effortless. It was almost as if he had just completely surrendered himself to the will of the Force, and therefore he didn't have to do much but just act in accordance to it. So I say all that because I don't need a bunch of experimentation done on a character as well-formed and as well-evolved as Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's so consistent. He's such a rock of a character. This is not the one to play games with, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I just hope that these shocking elements of this show have to do with the story and not taking liberties with the character. And that's pretty much what I said right from the get-go of this conversation. It's just the terminology in this report makes me a little bit nervous. It says this, and then it says, here's another quote from the report. People aren't prepared for how different this show is going to be. All generations of fans will be catered for. That makes me nervous trying to please everyone. It seems like, you know, that's a good way to lose focus of where your story is grounded when you're trying to please everyone.
Yeah. Well, it's still, I mean, I'm still super stoked for it. It's, there's not an official announcement, but Jim, you've predicted that that's probably what we're going to see perhaps at the very end of Book of Boba Fett is maybe some sort of teaser, maybe something that will announce officially that Obi-Wan, that the Kenobi series will premiere in May. You were predicting May the 4th, as a matter of fact. Is that a Wednesday, by the way? Did we look ahead on the calendar? It's a Wednesday. Yeah. Well, how convenient.
I wouldn't have made that prediction without doing a little research first.
So May the 4th, we're predicting that that will be the premiere for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was the premiere date for The Bad Batch Season 1 last year.
That was a Friday.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
But Lucasfilm, it wasn't a Friday last year. Remember, they gave us two episodes in that first week.
You're right.
And so May the 4th was a Tuesday. And then they dropped a Friday on us as well that week.
And that's what started it on Friday nights. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but they wanted to honor the May the 4th marketing holiday. Mm. And so, but they had to use the Bad Batch in that prized slot because they had nothing else.
Yeah.
This year, they have Kenobi.
Yep.
And so they're not going to prioritize Bad Batch and give it the big splash of, you know, where all the media attention is on Star Wars at one day of the year, May the 4th. They're not going to let the animated series sit in that spotlight seat again. It's going to be Kenobi.
Yeah, and I here's one area of that piece that I do agree with, which is biggest Star Wars event of the past few years and the next few years also. It has the potential to be because they've not to this point dealt with a more consequential character in Star Wars than Obi-Wan Kenobi. And this touches so much of the saga.
This
is a tentpole character. So yeah, it's big and it has the makings of, I think something is, you talk about all the hype surrounding May the 4th and, you know, all the media outlets are looking for a Star Wars tie-in. This is perfect. I mean, I think this has got all the makings of, you know, something that'll feel almost like a movie premiere in a way.
Oh, it'll be big. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll be here. We'll be here
for sure
with the Kenobi after show.
All right. So right before we started the show, I ran out to I have been like Ralphie in A Christmas Story running out to my mailbox every day waiting for my copy of the vintage collection, the Star Wars vintage collection archive to come out, and from the guys over at Blue Milk. And I'm so jelly because Jimmy Mac just happened to get one of the first ones that rolled out into mailboxes. This is something I backed on Kickstarter. Geez, how long ago was this? This was like two years ago. And of course, the pandemic hit and, you know, we don't need to explain. And of course, there were production delays and all that. But all good things that come to those who wait, especially for us here at Rebel Force Radio, because not only were we fans of the project and backed it, we ended up being in it.
Yeah.
Rebel Force Radio got
amazing.
Got credited. And for all of all characters, of course, who do you think Rebel Force Radio got a footnote in this particular character's entry? Would be Ben Quadraneros, the Ben Quadraneros figure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the book is phenomenal. It's great, Jason. I gave you I gave you a screenshot of page 129, which is the Ben Quadraneros page. And if you wouldn't mind, I would like you to read the entry, just because I'm quoted in it, so I don't want to read.
Oh, you don't want to read your own quote. All right, well, check this out. Okay, so for those of you who aren't watching this on video, this is essentially like an encyclopedia that covers the entire Star Wars vintage collection, the modern vintage collection line. So this began with the very first ones to come out. It was the Saga collection. That was the line of figures that was coming out. And it started out, I believe, as an exclusive subline of the Saga collection. Or maybe it was the original trilogy collection. I might get those two confused. But it started out as an exclusive. I believe they were at Toys R Us here in the States, and they were in these clamshells. And it was the first time that we got to see modern Star Wars figures on those classic vintage card backs. And our heads exploded at this, at the possibilities. And Kyle Newman, our good buddy, was just like, okay, that's it. We don't ever need to see another card back design ever again. This is it. You want to sell a Star Wars action figure, put it on these card backs, and you'll have no problems. And so that line sort of ran its course, and then it came back. Anyway, this fabulous book, the Vintage Collection Archive, has attempted to catalog all of these with great photos. And there is, as we mentioned, this Ben Quadraneros entry. And here's what it says. So there's a little bio on how each of these figures came about, some backstory. So this goes back to December 2011 is when this figure was released. And it says, if not for the online community, this Ben Quadraneros action figure might not exist. For years, podcasters Jimmy Mac McInerney and Jason Swank, along with Lucasfilm's Dave Filoni, would egg on their friend Kyle Newman, director of the Star Wars theme film Fanboys, who despised this pod racing character. Quoting Jimmy Mac, Kyle was so passionate about his hate, it became a running joke on the show. Then it really took off when Filoni started piling on, and it developed into a meme that grew beyond the show. Perhaps misunderstood, the attention didn't go unnoticed by Hasbro. The theatrical release of The Phantom Menace in 3D allowed them to capitalize on the craze. Ben Quadraneros featured a shocking amount of articulation, considering the character's limited physical attributes. These included ball-jointed shoulders, elbows, hips. This is, you know, nerdy action figure guy stuff.
Yeah, right, and that's how they break down all
right.
the figures.
But the fact that they covered the lore, and this is... Yeah. Truly, RFR and Ben Quadraneros' lore of Kyle just ranting not only about his love of vintage, but also his hatred of this character and how it just did not belong in Star Wars, and so funny. But really happy that they included us in this, Jim. That's awesome.
Well, it's just goes to show you how accurate this book really is. And what's really funny, though, is that there were people at Hasbro who got wind of the Ben Q hype that was being generated here on Rebel Force Radio, and they took it as a sign that this is a super popular character among fans.
That's all they could talk about.
Yeah, they just couldn't believe the amount of viral buzz Ben Quadraneros was getting, and it was basically an inside joke here on the show.
Right.
And it emerged as an actual action figure. I have failed my buddy Kitster a great deal. I've been really lobbying for his debut as a plastic action figure, and Kenner never or Hasbro never paid attention to that.
Well, but, it almost
you get
happened.
Kyle Newman. It you, almost happened.
You know, it
I've
almost
heard
happened.
Number of times.
Yes, there
a
was
a number of times.
There was. We have on good authority that there was a 2-pack that was planned. It was on the schedule of Kitster and Wald.
Yeah.
And I believe what derailed it, if I'm not mistaken, was the sequel trilogy. Or it was either the sequel trilogy Yeah, no, it was. It was the sequel trilogy. Maybe it was the 3D releases. Something.
I think it might have been something like that. But they would have been great for the 3D releases.
I know. Phantom so maybe Menace it wasn't
the only
that.
Film that came out in 3D.
Right.
But
right.
The Phantom Menace also, when that was released in 3D, I think that really did a lot to kill the vintage collection for a number of years because,
yep.
For some, Hasbro just, you know, once bitten, twice shy, not them. They flooded the marketplace with Jar Jar Binks action figures on a vintage card. Did they not learn their lesson? And that tanked the line. That tanked the line. I don't know if that's what it says in the book, but for me as an observer, that's what I saw happen.
Well, what we have heard is that for whatever reason, when the Phantom Menace was coming out in 3D, the short term memory was that, wow, we had so much product on the shelves. We're going to do that again. We're going to recreate the Phantom Menace frenzy that we had back in 1999. And it is still, you could make a case that that wave of figures for that Phantom Menace 3D release is what began the bottlenecking of Hasbro Star Wars action figures, the 3 3/4, getting onto the shelves. It created such a backlog because those sat on the pegs for such a long time that things, they started ending on clearance. And once they start going into clearance, then the stores don't want to buy more of them. Anyway, you really could make a claim that Phantom Menace nearly killed the Star Wars action figure line twice.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah. They don't learn. But, and once again, the Black Series puts out a Jar Jar Binks action figure in 2021.
Right.
It's the only thing you ever find on the pegs still to this day. I went into a Best Buy the other day and like just pegs and pegs filled with these Jar Jar Binks action figures. Newsflash. There are enough Jar Jar Binks action figures in circulation for several lifetimes.
Yeah.
There does not need to be any more Jar Jar Binks anything produced by anyone ever. End of rant.
I don't know that if I mentioned this on the show. I think maybe I have, but I have a Walgreens by me.
Oh, that's, I thought you had a Walgreens.
But, well, that's still
has a Walgreens.
That still has inbox on shelf at full retail. Mm-hmm. A Captain Zuvio 6-inch Black Series figure from The Force Awakens. Hand to God, still. Should I go buy it? Maybe I should go buy it.
Just to
give it out of its misery.
Well, just take a picture of it, at least on the peg.
It's in full retail, baby.
And then buy it.
It's unbelievable. I
want everyone to know about this Blue Milk book, though, because it is spectacular. It's in the tradition of some of Steve Sansweet's great action figure books from the past and is a very comprehensive look at the vintage collection through 2019. And it's a lot of fun. It's just a great read. It's if you don't own these action figures, it almost feels like you do when you own this book. And that's a real bonus. That's how you know the guys did a great job. Rich and Dave Myatt. Dave Myatt, we go way back with him.
Oh, boy.
And he's a great friend of ours. And they also gave... they have these bonuses that come with some of the Kickstarter tiers. And one of them is this commemorative coin set, which is, looks like the old coins that came with the action figures. You get Jabba Slave 1 and Jabba's Sail Barge. And those are really nice. And they also sent me this. These are prototype coins. They're kind of hard to see on camera. They're black, so they don't really reflect. And then a little Blue Milk patch, and this really nice portfolio of excellent action figure photographs from very talented photographers. It also comes with a Yak Face bookmark. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful package. If you got involved on the Kickstarter, you should be seeing your book soon. They had some production delays, which was really out of their control. So don't blame the guys. They're coming through big time. And if you ordered, you'll be getting your book soon.
I hope so. Like I said, I'm running out to the to the mailbox every day. Can't wait for mine.
You'll get a shipping notice.
Oh, okay.
I did at least. Okay, so that was nice to know that it was coming.
Yeah.
Then I started looking in the mailbox every day, and I was so excited when it did show up. So I just want to congratulate the guys for doing such excellent work and providing us with a really high quality hardcover book that focuses on the things we love, which are Star Wars action figures, and this focuses on the vintage collection.
Hey.
And books will be made available. If you didn't do Kickstarter, the guys will be at Star Wars Celebration in Anaheim. They'll
Excellent.
Have a table there. You'll be able to buy the book there. Once they get their pre-orders out the door, then you'll be able to follow up and make a purchase and get this book. And also there's a digital edition of it too. I definitely suggest you support these guys. Blue, okay, the website's interesting. It's Blue Milk, but it's www.bluemi.lk. So instead of a .com, it's an LK, .LK, bluemi.lk. The pre-orders are all getting sent now, and as soon as all the backer books are sent out, they'll be moving to in-stock orders. And
boy, that's laid out a lot like, in fact, I was just looking through the Steve Sansweet book. I got it right.
The silver one.
Yes.
This is the format is inspired by Steve's classic book.
I
about
love
Star Wars action
this
figures.
Book. And
what's the name of that one?
The Star Wars the Action Figure Archive.
I love that book.
This is such a great book, and I'll tell you, it's come in clutch for me because I just started cleaning up and redisplaying my childhood vintage collection figures. But here's what's so cool about this book is that they show you how to match up the weapons with the figures.
Yeah.
So that has really come in handy for me as I'm working on this display of these vintage figures. And anyway, if it's half as good as Steve's book, the original Action Figure Archive, I just can't wait.
And Steve does the foreword for the new book, the vintage collection book from Blue Milk. You got a nice foreword there from Steve Sansweet. A photo of the man there.
Yeah.
And just such a high quality work. And it's, you know, produced by Star Wars fans.
Right.
These guys are collectors and they intimately know everything about Star Wars action figures. I think I know a lot about Star Wars action figures. These guys have pedigrees. They're like action figure PhDs, man.
Yeah.
They're so sharp. They know everything. They know more about the action figures, Rich and Dave Myatt. D. Martin Myatt, I should say.
I'm excited.
His pen name is.
They
know more
than
people at Hasbro, is what I'm saying.
The tier that I bought... I was excited because they got this fella, Kim Simmons, who did the original photography of the card backs for the vintage line. When you saw the figures all displayed on that yellow background, which is very iconic. So he recreated that for this incredible poster. So I'm really looking forward to that, having it hung up in the RFR studios. I've just been full of nostalgia for my original Star Wars action figures. And I always credit Jimmy Mack because for the longest time, I wouldn't want to put them on display because they were well played with. They were really, you know, some of the paint's worn off. And I thought, I had this idea that, well, you didn't display something that looked like it had been played with. You displayed new, fresh stuff. And when you go over and you spend time in Jimmy Mack's Star Wars room, you see that most of the action figures on the, especially the vintage stuff, they're all from your childhood and they are played with and you can tell that they're well loved and they still, in fact, I think that they display better because they display with all those memories and, you know, you get all the feels and all of that. You know, mm-hmm. Nothing against, you know, if your thing is to go out there and buy mint on card vintage Star Wars action figures, first of all, congratulations, you're a millionaire, obviously. Yeah. But that's totally up to you. But when you're displaying parts of your own childhood, your own history as a fan, that's I think that's even better.
It's even better. And boy, that picture you showed of Kim Simmons there, can you put that back on the screen?
Yeah.
So he's the original photographer of the vintage Star Wars action figure line. And this is such a great picture of him because he has that old school brown camera, that classic vintage camera, and he's got it functioning. You know,
I think it goes poof. When you take the picture,
well, it could. I mean, and of course, the thing that you used to screw the flashbulb into is very famously known to Star Wars fans as the hilt of the lightsabers, as fashioned by the Graphics Company
or the
who's the set designer that Paul works with? Roger Christian.
Yes,
Roger Christian. And our own Paul Bateman actually works with Roger on some things, and so he took the flashbulb handle and turned that into a lightsaber hilt.
Yeah,
Graphics or something, right? This guy, he could be using a lightsaber to take pictures of lightsabers.
Yeah, the camera is so old. He throws the black tarp over himself. Yeah. You know,
right, exactly. Exactly. And it's got a plate. The film is a plate. You slide in and out of it.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
So they're really being super authentic with this stuff. It's these figures aren't being photographed the way they were back in the 70s.
They weren't photographed with that kind of camera in the 70s.
Well, I don't know. Why would Kim be posing with this?
Oh, my God.
You know?
Yeah, I don't think so, but maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
But it's a great book. I really recommend it. So bluemi.lk.com. Tell them Rebel Force Radio sent you.
All right, pop culture.
Rebel Force Radio.
You've already made that Star Wars reference.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars parody!
I got to tell you, for years, you know, Jimmy and his brother Bill know what a Seinfeld fan that I am, and for years they told me, you gotta watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. Why haven't you gotta watch? You gotta watch Curb. If you love Seinfeld, you gotta watch Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I did start at the end of last year, and got a little derailed. But I'm totally digging it. I'm totally enjoying it. And we've got something from the very first season. So this is an episode of Curb that I've seen, and this moment jumped right out at me. So tee it up for us here, Jim. This is a little Star Wars and pop culture from Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm, season one.
Well, it's an interesting scene. It has nothing to do with Star Wars, but it has everything to do with the Rancor. Because we have goofed on how to say Rancor. You want to say it Rancor or Rancor? As we've heard, you know, variants from certain fans over the years, rank. As a matter of fact, I found myself getting kind of tongue-tied just a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about it. I think I said Rancor, and I'm like, Rancor?
What? Yeah.
But we all call it the Rancor. That's what 3PO says. Oh, no, the Rancor. Right. So that's, to me, that's canon.
Yeah.
But I let it slide when our friends will call it a Rancor. And I catch myself every once in a while doing that inadvertently. And there was a little back and forth between Larry David and Cheryl Hines in Curb Your Enthusiasm, season one, episode four, The Bracelet, when Larry was sensing a little animus coming from his wife, Cheryl. And Larry uses the term Rancor more in the way that normal people would use it as opposed to us psycho Star Wars fans, but it is still the same word and provides the same challenges when saying it because you have that alternative way of saying it. And so you could say Rancor, and you hear Larry David here in this short clip struggling with that.
I'm sensing Rancor. Or is it Rancor? Rancor? I know how to spell it.
I know how to spell it.
Rancor? Rancor?
Rancor? Rancor? He's just talking to himself, you know. She's not even acknowledging him. He's even in the room. And
all right, I'm gonna make a statement. I think that I prefer to call it rancor when I'm referring to the emotion,
yeah,
and rancor when I'm referring to the beast.
Okay, that's canon. All right, that's how we're gonna roll with it from now on. Rancor. So thank you, Larry David, for putting that controversy to rest. This is one that a lot of people have weighed in on. They wanted to hear us feature this on Star Wars and Pop Culture. It's from Conan O'Brien's podcast, Conan Needs a Friend. Conan goes on a very lengthy rant about Yoda, and it just comes out of the blue and provides many comedic moments. And I found about a minute and a half here of some of this rant. It goes on for like 8 minutes, him talking.
Oh, my gosh.
Yoda.
It's all Yoda.
Of course,
talk?
You know, and Conan, he gets a little blue with our green friend. He gets a little blue. So I tried to find stuff that's not too raw, but it's Conan O'Brien. There might be a little rawness in here. So here's Conan Needs a Friend and Conan's Yoda rant about affirmative quotes. That's how it all begins. He's reading a list of quotes that provide affirmation to you. They're supposed to be like uplifting quotes. Mm. They're supposed to be quotes that can give you little lessons in life or what have you. So let's pick it up as Conan's going through the list.
All right.
Let's just put our best foot forward.
Yeah.
And remember, forward your best foot.
No, that doesn't work either. That's not good.
These are awful.
Those are bad.
These are bad.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you try and don't succeed,
yeah,
eventually you'll succeed in trying. Nope.
Not good. Well, I mean, that one's true, but it's just not poetic.
No. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But does it sense make?
Oh, now you're just turning into Yoda.
And I'm getting angry. Why am I getting angry?
You realize Yoda probably said many of these, and just other Jedis were around going, oh, Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
Yoda was probably around just disappointing people with his lousy fake aphorisms, you know?
Are you comparing yourself to Yoda?
No, I just can picture him like saying, remember when, you know, when you add cream to coffee, sometimes coffee you cream.
See, that one's pretty good.
And you're like, what?
That's good.
Yoda. That's good. And he's like, wise I am, and am I wise? And you're like, no.
It's working as Yoda, though.
Yeah, because people give Yoda so much slack. Because Yoda talks that way, and because he's like just tiny little creature, wrinkly creature, and he's 8,000 years old.
Wow, we're exposing a Yoda beef here.
No. I'm just saying he gets a lot of slack. You know that Yoda shows up at a party and everyone's like, oh my God, it's Yoda. Hey, Yoda, thanks for being here.
Good to be here it is. And is good to be is now here.
And people are like, wow, that blew my mind, Yoda.
Your mind blew. Blue are you.
Yoda, what?
I'll blow you.
No, Yoda,
no,
Jesus.
Don't do that to Yoda.
Yoda, that's disgusting.
There you go.
Where do you go from here?
Add coffee to your cream your coffee. Where do you go from there? That's where you go. Hit the theme.
That's going to wrap things up for this week. Thank you all so much for being here. Really appreciate it. Especially, we want to thank our supporters over on Patreon. Don't forget about Rebel Force Radio on Patreon. You can find it right on the Rebel Force Radio website at rebelforceradio.com. There's a Patreon banner. A lot of benefits, multiple tiers that you can subscribe to, support the show, and be rewarded with things like weekly full show video. That's right, the podcast you're listening to right now. You could be staring at our faces and seeing pictures of Larry David and Conan O'Brien as we're talking about these things. Also, you can get exclusive podcasts that you can't subscribe to on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. No. Only available through Patreon, things like RFR Comlink. Which reminds me, once we get Book of Boba Fett after show, we got to get back. We got to do some RFR comlinks because they're so much fun. Maybe we'll do some like live comlinks or something. That would be fun. I really love the live shows. The interactivity is a lot of fun. RFR Q&A. You never know what the topic is going to be with those Q&A. A lot of times it's Star Wars. Sometimes it's not Star Wars. And that's when a member of the Patreon group gets to host a show with oftentimes Jimmy Mack, occasionally me. And they get to pick the topic. And off to the races they go. Also, the Babu Freaks, Clone Wars Declassified Remastered, and Star Wars Oxygen. All those archives are available only on Patreon. And as a Patreon member, you also get specialized treatment. Yeah, you get privilege. Privilege when you call in on the RFR live shows. And we try to prioritize you. Our great call screener, Tyler Page, prioritizes you in the queue. So we try to get to your calls first. And it is, as we said at the top of the show, really a great, 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 great community of Star Wars fans hanging out, having fun together, talking the wars. Again, those details at patreon.com/RebelForceRadio. RFR on YouTube is also a really great resource. Absolutely 100% free. It really is a repository of RFR content spanning 15 years of our podcast adventures, from classic interviews and parodies and bits to the latest live stream and after shows. In fact, we were talking earlier about our interview that we did with, was it Cheryl Whitlatch?
Terrell.
Mm-hmm. Thinking of Cheryl from Curb. Terrell Whitlatch. And no sooner do you talk about it than Jimmy Mack has it up and available on the YouTube channel. So please check it out. YouTube.com/RebelForceRadio. If you'd like to chat with us in between shows, there are multiple ways you can do it. You can send us an email, show@RebelForceRadio.com. You can drop us a voicemail, 708-320-1737. That's 708-320-1RFR. You can talk to us on Facebook, including the official Rebel Force Radio Facebook group. You can join. It's absolutely free. You just got to answer a couple of questions, prove that you listen to the show, and you're in the club. Also on Twitter at @RFRRebelForce. For daily Rebel Force Radio updates. We're also on Instagram. So in the hub for all of that, for all things and everything, RFR is at RebelForceRadio.com. But if you like to support the show, the number one way you can do that is by subscribing to the podcast and telling your friends about it. Spread the news about Rebel Force Radio and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. Like we say, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible, Pandora, Samsung, anywhere you can find podcasts. You'll find us right here at Rebel Force Radio. And you'll find us here next week for the Book of Boba Fett after show. Please subscribe to us on YouTube because that's how you get the notifications when we're going live. But we'll be live next Wednesday for Book of Boba Fett after show, looking at chapter 6. We only got two more. That's it. Two more. Warmed. I know. And then we'll, of course, be back with another edition of the regular Rebel Force Radio podcast. So we'll see you next time. Love you all so much. For Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
Rancor? I know how to spell it.